The following is an interview with Nancy Guthrie McKay by Dixie Hibbs for the Kentucky Oral History Commission, Prohibition and its Effects on Nelson County. The interview was conducted in Bardstown, Nelson County, Kentucky, at 200 block of South 3rd Street on September 1988. Nancy, would you give us your date of birth and where and things about your family?
Well, I was born in Nelson County early times, which was just a little settlement with a store and a distillery and a post office. On April the 11th, 1916, and my father, of course, was associated with the distillery. He did not own it. At that time, it was owned by Mrs. Beam still owned a part of it, because Mr. Beam had died. Mr. Jack Beam, of course, was the original owner of it. And his nephew, I believe, John Shoney, ran the distillery. At the time that I was born, probably Mrs. Beam still had an interest in it, but they later bought her out. And then it was just Mr. Shoney, and my father had an interest at some time. I'm not real sure about all these, you know, financial deals, but I remember it was my father's life down there. And it was really a fascinating place to grow up, because we lived very close to the distillery, and we were running back and forth, my brothers and I, pretty regularly, and were put up with very nicely by the clerks in the distillery in the mopping room, which today is just unbelievable to think of the crudeness of the bottles that went in there, where all the things were operating, and the bottles came down, and the girls had the blue, and they put on blue, and the next group put on labels, and this moving belt, of course, fascinated us. And then there was a pile, I can remember so well, what was a pile in it once, a pile of broken glass. Oh. The bottles that were broken were all thrown at the end of the bottling room, and I guess the where they filled the barrels, maybe. It wasn't the warehouse where the barrels were stored, but it was a runway between that and a little house on the end, sort of a tool shed. And they had just a mountain of broken glass there. And one day the little bridge across broke, and I fell on the glass. I remember I don't think I was that too bad, but I scared to death. Mm-hmm. That's one of the vivid recollections. Mm-hmm. And I suppose Prohibition came in, you know, before I really remember, but the distillery still operated.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because 1920 to 1933 is the Prohibition period, and if you were born 1916?
Yeah, I was born 1916. Mm-hmm. I remember, of course, they were still, I suppose, allowed to continue with the operations.
Maybe for medicinal purposes?
Well, see, until 20, I'm not real sure when the distillery closed. Dad bought the land there that was owned by the distillery. I mean, it was something like, I think, 500 or 600 acres. And there was a cattle barn adjoining, you know, beyond where they kept the cattle, but I know now they fed the flock to. At the time, it didn't mean much to me. But I suppose that Dad must have bought that around 22 or 23. I can remember, even after Mr. Shawnee died, and I remember him, and I don't guess he died before 22. Or maybe he died around 22, but I remember him distinctly. Perhaps he didn't know when he died. I doubt it. But anyway, I can remember him so well. He was such a dear person. And I was in school, gosh, when I was six, that would be 22, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe she was a widow then, though. When we were in school, John, Ben, and I used to trudge up to her house up on North 3rd Street to sell her chances on things at school, and she wasn't a Catholic. It was such an imposition. Mother used to just want to kill us every time we talked to her. And she lived longer, but she died before, I believe she died before we left early times, which was in 28. And she had an interesting life, and I can remember her coming out there with some various people and how upset my father would be at some of the time she kept. But anyway, I remember those operations, and I remember that when they ceased was when my father had this cases of whiskey that he had a vault built for down in the basement of our house. I mean, it was just like a bank vault, and you walked into it, and there were, you know, shelves all around it, and there was a great big steel door, and you had to have a combination to open it. And it was filled in 26 or something. It was filled in 26 because that's when we had the robbery with the so-called insurance man coming out and saying, not insurance,
revenue
man, mm-hmm. flashing a badge and said that he was at, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the night, that he was been sent out to see about this illegal whiskey, which, of course, was not illegal. And that's when he gave himself, revenue man was coming out there. Yeah. But that was in April of 26. So by that time, the distillery was defunct.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
I would say.
Do you not remember exactly when he built the vault? In other words, you know it's before 26, but you don't know when it was 20?
Well, I don't know whether he built it. He may have built it when we remodeled the house, which was in the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
The house had belonged to Mr. Beam,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Jack Beam, and his son, Ed Beam, had lived there, I guess, as a bachelor, I suppose, before he married. And when he left, he married Mrs. Shirley, wasn't that her name? Mrs. Beam, she had a Margaret Shirley, she had two daughters. She'd been married before, Margaret Swagger Shirley. There was a man, she was married to a man, I think his last name was Shirley, or Swagger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which.
Okay.
And he had two daughters. She had two daughters. She was divorced. She had two daughters by him. And Ed Beam married her. He died before his father. So he died in 14. And by that time, they had built this house here in Bardstown and had moved there because mother and dad married in 1911, in October 1911. And Dad, before that, had batched in the house and done some fixing up. And that's where he and mother went to live. And I vaguely remember the old house, the way the stairway went and all that. So I would say it was around 20, 21 when they remodeled the house. And that may have been when he put in knowing that this is what could happen. So he may have, but they were still, I can, you know, vividly remember. As a matter of fact, I think when I was 8 years old, when would that be, 24. I believe that the distillery was still, they were doing something. In 84, in 24, because I got a diamond ring on my birthday, a little chip of a diamond ring, and the man that was, I thought, Gager, he was something, he was some government man that I was so crazy about that lived there on this little house beyond the place. And he said at the time, "What are you getting for your birthday?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to have a diamond ring, but my daddy says I have to wait until I'm 16. And he said, "Well, we'll just talk to your daddy about that. I don't see why you can't get it from your rent." So I can, you know, that
yeah,
is.
That's impressive.
So that's impressive. I hadn't thought about that. Isn't that something that comes up now?
Mm.
And so it was just a little chip on in a little white gold ring. But I remember that he would not have been there if there hadn't been something, it seems to me, to do with whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe Dad, you know, put that vault in from the very beginning. I don't remember any construction. We had a full basement, of course, you had coal bins, you know. And there was an inside entrance and an outside entrance, and I don't remember work going on particularly. after the house was remodeled. But all of us were born there. All four of us were literally born in the house. In fact, my brother, who died, was born in 22 in that house. And then mother lost him, and she always felt that she'd get in the hospital when it happened. So then Lewis and Jim, and when they were born, she went to Louisville for the hospital to have them. So we were born in the house.
Well, since your family was connected with distilleries, then you heard all types of stories and the situation. And you also mentioned that you moved from early times in 28.
We moved in February of 28.
Okay. Was your father still involved in distilleries, or did he move you?
By that time, the distillery was closed. He had lost some money I think he had traded. Made a very bad trade, I guess, but he had been involved in a real estate deal with some apartments in Louisville, I believe, at that time. And this man, the apartments were all full when he bought them, and we figured later, or I heard rumors later, that they had just been people had been put in there. Mm-hmm. And he thought he was getting a big deal. I think they were on Eastern Parkway. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he bought it, the deal was closed. All of a sudden, the apartments were all empty. So mother and dad never talked very much in front of us, and there was never a lot of gossip in the house about anything. But I think the undercurrent was that those people were just show people, that they had just put them there to give the impression, which isn't a very honest thing to do, I guess. But they had never suspected. And we moved to all the houses of Vivian. They'd been torn down except for Wickham, and it moved it. We lived up on North 3rd Street right next to the depot, across the street from the depot, in what was called the Barber Place. Mm-hmm. We rented it.
Yeah.
And we moved there, I think, in February of 28. And we stayed there until... I don't know whether they moved out to Wicklin. Mother and Dad bought Wicklin, I think, in 30 from Will Stiles. And it took about a year, I imagine, to renovate it because there was nothing. There were no lights, there was no water, there was no heat. The house was just in the structure, it was okay, but it had to be plastered, I think. It had to be. I remember the story. I was away at school, so this was stuff I heard. That in the what we used as our living room, which was really, I guess, the library with the bookshelves, there were great big holes in the floor, the beautiful floor. Mm-hmm. I don't know, ash,
I think it is.
Where they had let potatoes rot. And the trash had been there so long that they literally made places in the floor.
The acid from the rotting,
I guess so. Just had, and the heavens knows, tenants mm-hmm. had lived in it. And there was just, I think I heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that they even kept sheep in the house, some of the tenants at some time. And of course, the Niskins or the Beckhams or whoever had lived there late were in just horrible shape financially, too. And I heard that they had broken up some of the furniture and some of the molding to keep it so warm, just to put in the fire. So whether that's, those are things that I don't know for sure. And they used to say that there was some treasure buried in, I always thought it was in the dining room. I don't know whether it's supposed to be in the fireplace. There was a fireplace in the dining room. Or not. Is it still there?
Mm-hmm. It's on the outer wall. So you have your fireplace that's on the outer wall.
And we never found any treasure. But then mother and dad bought that house and bought Wicklin and fixed it up. And my two of my aunts came from Louisville, and they helped to run a tea room. I don't know whether they did that when we first went in there or not. They may have been a few months when we first moved in. I don't guess they started, if we moved in the fall, they probably didn't start doing anything until spring. And then we also kept people overnight.
Early bed and breakfast?
there weren't, and I can remember that they had, for a menu, they used the two parlors for the dining area. And then we lived, you know, all over, all the back other part to the right-hand side. And then upstairs, it seemed to me when Newman and I came home, we always had a different room. I mean, they put us in one room for a while, and then I don't know whether Mother would rent it out or what. Or maybe some more people came, maybe some more family came to stay. And then we'd be in another room. But Newman and I were both in boarding school. So when we came home, they would just kind of shift us around. John and Ben, I think, stayed on the third floor pretty regularly. Louis and Jimmy were, no, John and Ben were there, back in that transit room off above the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And one time, Louis and Jimmy, I guess, were upstairs. And my two aunts were up there later. Then sometimes they put us up. Seemed to be moving around.
Not time.
But they, oh gosh, what was I going to say?
Talking about running the restaurant or tea room, and yeah, so, you know, economically that this.
And they would serve a country ham, fried chicken, potato, two vegetables, a salad, and a dessert. And they charged $1.55. and included your drink, okay, your coffee.
Yeah.
And I can remember Mother saying, and people in Barstown think that's too much.
Yeah.
And hot biscuits or cornbread or whatever, well, you know.
Did they have traffic from tourist traffic or people out of Louisville or just
how did it? Well, it seemed to me that they were mostly, I don't think there were too many tourists in those days, that people just dropped in. They were people, the Beckhams, of course, the Beckhams were back and forth and their families were back and forth. Mm-hmm. And you know, we knew a lot of people that were interested. And then if somebody was entertaining, they would, in Buffalo Bardstown, they would bring people out. And I think they had the mayor, you know, would bring people out for any, not a convention, but there would be people. I have the book. I have one of the ledgers.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
I have
that.
One of the ledgers. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if anybody would want it. You can have it and put it wherever you want to put it.
Okay.
But it's right in here. It has some really outstanding names in it.
That's good.
Happy Chandler and I say all the Beckham family. I can remember meeting those people. And then we had a lot of family in Louisville. We had friends. It seems to me that every Sunday, of course, we had a lot of whiskey too around. And every Sunday of the world, we had maybe some of those people came and paid. But I can remember a lot of them sitting down at that dining room table.
That weren't necessarily paying customers.
And, you know, they have a few drinks. Charlie Wood Brown, well, of course, he was just, you know, a family. Charlie Elliott, whose sister was married to Mother's uncle. And some of that family, some of those humans would come. If anybody was visiting, you know, they all loved to come out and eat. And of course, we had Hawk, we had Louise, we had a cook. I don't remember all the cooks that came and went. Sometimes at the back of the house, there was a room. Is the sister got that room back there?
There's a couple, the kitchen? I think. Yeah, aren't there two rooms or just one room back there?
There was one room. One, yeah. It seemed to me at the time.
Mm-hmm. Then a porch and on the side.
Mother put that
enclosed porch.
That enclosed porch. I suppose it was like the Simpson house.
Mm-hmm.
I guess
louvered
with the whole the veranda all the way down. Mm-hmm. And Mother removed that veranda, which was probably in very bad shape, and she enclosed the kitchen and all that. And the big refrigerator was in one. I don't see how she ran a tea room. We would come home, and there was chicken salad made up, and there was, of course, people would have luncheons out there. Chicken salad and country ham. There was milk in great big crocks. And I can remember John and Ben. And I would go out there and we'd just see what there was and just enjoy thoroughly. I was away at school and I'd come home, and during the summertime, Mother used to say, you know, we're not fixing this for you.
Hey, the family ate up the profits, huh?
The family
and the visitors ate the profits.
Would be eating up a whole lot.
Well, actually,
I don't guess they did that for but a couple of.
I was wondering how long. I guess the ledger would tell you how long.
2 years, because there was dissension in the family. I mean, my father. Talking about when he came to town. He came to town. He worked in the Farmers Bank. I think he was a cashier at the Farmers Bank. What other? Of course, he still was going to the races, He was still playing poker, I'm sure, and all these other things. Maybe it supplemented his income. The races didn't, I'm sure, but the gambling might have. But he was making $125 a month, I believe, at that time. This is in 30 maybe, into the 30s. And he had me in boarding school. Newman was at Notre Dame, or at St. Mary's, Kansas. St. Mary's, Kansas. John and Ben were down at St. Joe and our Bethlehem. We were all in private school, and we ate well. I don't ever remember being hungry. I do remember that maybe my mother didn't spend a lot of clothes, money on clothes. I remember one time Dad coming home, you know, we don't put this in or not, but coming home from the races, he told me she didn't want to go. He flew up.
Flew
28
and 30
and up to Latonia. Oh my heavens, she scared her to death. She didn't want to go. And he came back and he had brought presents for everybody. And she said, "Well, you know, you must have had a good time, had a good day." And she was very cold with that whole thing. And he said, "No, no, as a matter of fact, he didn't. He had lost money. But he just decided he'd go out and buy something." There wasn't anything about him. It didn't matter whether he won or lost. You know, it was never any different. He didn't take it out on family. And the next day, I can remember that she went to Louisville, and she came back, and she had a new coat. I know she had a coat for a couple of years, and shoes and goodness. And I never will forget. We did hear a little bit about money. Ordinarily, they didn't talk about it, but I just said, "How in the world are you going to pay for all this?" And she said, "I don't know, and I don't give a damn." I'll never forget that. First time I think I'd ever heard my mother say damn in all of her life. And apparently it was all right. I mean, it was paid for. She kept it. But that was, I just wonder how in the world that he managed. He may have had some stocks. He may have had some dividends. He may have borrowed money. I don't know. But it seems to me like a very measly amount. He's raising six of us on.
Well, you know, when we started out about the prohibition, and he had, as a distiller, he was allowed by the government to save so much whiskey for his own personal use. And since prohibition went on for 13 years, did they ever run out of whiskey?
Oh, yes.
That's what I wondered
how.
Yes. Now.
In fact, he just would get good bootleg whiskey.
Yeah.
There was when we were at Wickland, upstairs, he had a little safe upstairs. And he had, I can't remember exactly what the thing was. It was a thing that he could pour, like a decanter, I guess, kind of upside down. It was kind of like a water bottle, and you could push it and get the
like
liquor
a
out of it.
Oh, yeah, like a siphon.
A siphon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was when they were still running the tea room. I wasn't home at the time. Jimmy or Ben probably would remember more about it, but I heard the story. That he went up there and got some liquor out and forgot or failed or got stuck.
Oh.
Let the stuff run out, and it ran for an hour before anybody discovered it.
Oh.
And the whole place was filled with fumes of liquor, and the floor was saturated, and maybe it dripped down. I don't know. But there is a story, and I know I would hear about it, and Dad come along, he'd say, "I don't chance that he's going to tell that story."
He didn't like learning about that.
He didn't care anything about hearing about that. But so we always had liquor.
Yeah.
I never remember in our house, my father had a drink every night. I don't remember drinking except at night, except on Sunday when people come in the afternoon. But he would, and he drank it straight. And he'd shudder, and you know, and I said, "What do you do it for?"
Yeah, you know, if it makes you
feel it. But he thought it would heal anything. Now, headaches, he wasn't real sure about. I don't think he recommended for headaches. But from toe hurting you to elbow or shoulder, take it from whiskey. We were all just kind of broad, but none of us ever, you know, drank very much. Jimmy did. One time he went around when he was a little fella, draining all the glasses that were left after lunch after they were all sitting around one Sunday, and I remember he came to the table. Mother said, "What is the matter with him?" And somebody said, "I think he just drained
all of the
glasses
cocktail glasses, huh?"
Sitting around, But I don't think he ever did that again.
Well, since your father, I'm trying to go back here and kind of tie it up a little, with him not being able to work in the distillery and coming to town, and then he got a job as the cashier at the bank, and then...
And then later, I guess he stayed at the bank the whole time we were in town, and then we, by the time we moved to Wickland, I believe it was when we moved to Wickland, he became a trustee, an insurance company, what I want to call it, Kentucky Home Life Insurance, went into receivership.
Okay.
At this period, Dan Talbot must have been up at Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not real sure about these dates, Dixie, at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, and as I say, I'm away at school, so yeah. I'm not really in on the ground floor of all this. But they tried to get someone to oversee this receivership, this mm-hmm. and this rebuilding of, I think it was Kentucky Home Life. And they had proposed several men, and somebody in the group was not agreeable. And finally, Dan said, Louis Guthrie. And so everybody agreed that Dan could be a good person to have. So when we were living at Wickland, he was driving to Louisville down on Fifth Street every day. And that's the old 31E.
Okay.
And I think he made it downtown in 45 minutes.
Mm.
That's an exact idea of how my dad drove.
Yes.
And he went every morning and he came back. And I can remember his leaving at Wickland. You know, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. when I, now maybe he got that job before we left Wickland. I mean, left the barber place. But I don't think so.
Well, and you called him Lewis Guthrie, but his name actually was Cyrus Lewis Guthrie. And sometimes you see it written S.L. Guthrie.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's
the way he signed it.
S.L. Guthrie.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to be clear on
and the Cyrus is S-E-A-R-L-E-S.
Yes.
I found out my brother Lewis, whose name for him has never spelled it correctly.
Okay.
He spelled it S-E-R-L-S.
Mm.
He didn't know it. But he said, I don't think Daddy knows how to spell it. And I said, well, it's supposed to be L-E-S.
Yes, that way. Well, let's see, we talked a little bit about the travel. You know, here you're having a tea room there, but you also serve liquor illegally, I guess.
Well, I don't believe we served it.
You don't think it was served
in
public?
No, it wasn't served to the people. A mother, they didn't do that. This was family and friends that were gathered on Sunday and afternoon.
Right.
Maybe some of them came into the living room
mm-hmm.
and they had a highball and then they went on to dinner.
Right.
But that was not, they were not charged for that. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
There was no charge at all. And they were friends. Dr. Irvin Abel was a friend of the families. Of course, he was a friend of the families out at early times because he used to come out and go hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember always, you know, that there were parties out there, that there were,
mm-hmm.
that they had drinks always. It's just something that I never remember being without.
Without that. And then you said later when you know the whiskey ran out, then did everyone know bootleggers they could get it from, or did you trust moonshiners, or were they getting the whiskey from the warehouses, do you think, or were they actually getting new moonshine?
I don't really know. I think St. Piet was giving us a lot of homebrew.
Really? Remember? How did that happen?
Didn't you know about St. Piet and
homebrew?
Oh, boy, I tell you, she can make homebrew that just takes time.
Well, now, what do you call homebrew?
It's kind of a form of beer, I guess.
Okay.
She made it in her bathtub, literally. In her bathtub, when they lifted up. You've never heard that story?
No, well, St. Piet, you know, the image she has to me is this nice little old lady of 70 or 80, and I have trouble putting her stirring up a batch of bathtub homebrew.
She did. They lived up there where Gentry's office is.
Okay.
We call it
We call it now the Adam Anthony House. The brick on East Stephen Foster.
They had an apartment. Uncle Vernon and Yvette had an apartment up there. Mrs. Burba's house. Mrs.
Okay.
Burba lived downstairs. And Mr. Burba. And I think he died while Yvette and Vernon were still there. And they had an upstairs apartment. They had a great big living room, a bedroom. I can still see her sitting there at her dressing table curling her hair. A little kitchen off to one side. I guess we ate. I guess there was room in the kitchen to eat, but there's just a few of us, three of us, and a bathroom. And Auntie F made homebrew that was out of this world.
Okay, let me stop a minute.
Well, I'm amazed that some of the horses
have been told about this. We have had to stop and turn our tape over, but we are talking about APF, who is Beatrice Hurst.
Rodman.
Beatrice Rodman.
Hurst.
Hurst, right. Beatrice Rodman Hurst.
The wife of Bernard Hurst.
Wife of Bernard, and they were contemporaries.
They were my godparents.
Contemporaries.
They were my mother and father's friends, the best of friends, I guess.
Now, didn't she work at a distillery, too, or is that later?
She works at the Fairfield Distillery.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's later.
Later, okay.
I mean, I'm talking about,
during
the Depression
during
Prohibition.
Prohibition and Depression.
They had stairs that, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in that upstairs, well, it's still the same.
Yeah, you go
up
and
kind
back.
Of crooked stairs. Mm-hmm. I remember that vividly, not very wide. And Ambiette would have her spend days. She would entertain her friends. They played bridge an awful lot. And I can remember going up there, and she took the advice of homebrew. She gave us some, and we kept it. She must have given us a dozen bottles or more. Where she got who furnished her with the bottles?
We furnished bottles, all right.
And they had them stored at Wicklund. We're still looking at Wicklund. And they had them stored at Wicklund, and one night, and I don't remember whether it was summertime or wintertime, we heard a pop. And the next thing, we heard another pop. And we went out, and these bottles had, the corks had popped off one after another, and homebrew was running all over.
Was foaming all over.
But up there, she served homebrew. Now, I never saw it in the bathtub, I don't think. But she made it with yeast and whatever the ingredient hops, whatever the ingredients are for homebrew, and I guess it had to be stirred. And I guess they went someplace else to bathe when they, how long it took.
That was what I was going
to
ask.
How do you make homebrew, right? But it must have been 100 proof.
Really?
Or better.
Oh.
And I can remember Newman and I, so it must have been in the summertime, Newman and I went up to pick up Mother. And these ladies were having more fun. My mother didn't touch whiskey for years. I don't think Mother ever had a drink of whiskey until maybe in 38, after my brother, maybe after Julie died. Julie didn't die until 41. So as far as I know, that was the first time my mother ever had highball. And she didn't drink very much, she didn't like it. But she would drink homebrew, and she drank champagne. And we went up to get Mother, and there were these four or five ladies up there, and they were having the best time. Emily Sisko, B.F., Mother, Nanny, maybe Grace, I don't know who all they were. And they came down the stairs just giggling like kids, and I said, Newman, what in the world? He says, they've been into the homebrew. That's what it was. Oh, it was so good, and it would be so cold. And, but it really could, I tell you, it could.
Then it's like, you're saying it's like a beer, but it's higher in alcohol content.
Yeah. Hers was high.
Hers was high.
Hers was the highest. I can remember Dad saying, oh my goodness.
Wonder if she has a recipe book still around or something.
I wonder. I can't imagine that Arch or some of them
have
never
ask.
Said anything
I'm
to
gonna,
you
well,
about
I Well, just that's not been a question I've
Nobody's
asked.
Nobody's ever come up.
I'll have to go over and record his reaction.
Has,
yeah.
I'll bet something. She must have had a recipe for it, but that one time it either got hot. I guess it got hot.
Yeah. And
was
the,
what made
the
it
gas then made it.
The
uh-huh.
gas made mm-hmm. it. But she used yeast, I'm mm-hmm. sure, and I guess malt. Oh, it was real dark. I mean, not dark like stout is dark, or that Guinness beer that you buy mm-hmm. in Ireland. But it was a real dark golden color.
Mm.
It was beautiful, and it was good. But that, so you're asking, what did they do? I don't remember that Dad had white moonshine. It seemed to me It was always,
amber or brown. Well, then, maybe he was getting it then from people who were getting it out of barrels. I mean, they said.
Or he might have been buying medicinal stuff, you know, you could do that. I mean, if you knew the right people and you.
Well, I was wondering there, did you ever see anybody that had a prescription for medicinal whiskey? You know, legally, you had to have the prescription, go to the drugstore and get your.
I don't remember seeing that. I don't ever remember it being discussed. They wouldn't talk about it, I guess.
Well, maybe it wasn't.
And I don't know what they did. I don't, and I may be wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't drink whiskey. I drank homebrew.
Yeah.
I tell you, somebody else, there was a little place over in New Haven. Sonny Ray, who worked for, Sonny, was that his name? That's not his name. Leon Ray, that worked for the Stileses. And he did, gosh, Jack used to take me down there. He lived someplace. Where did he live? And he made homebrew. He made, you go down there and get some beer.
Okay. Do you think then when these people were making, not necessarily Ampiette, but different ones who were making homebrew, did they supply it to like restaurants or saloons?
Oh, no.
Or of course saloons were not supposed to be open.
Saloons. There
okay.
Were, no,
they closed
go,
all the saloons.
You couldn't
okay.
go in a restaurant and get any of this. I mean, this little place over in New Haven, I think it was, I want to say it's a quarter a bottle.
Something.
You just went into these people's kitchen. They just had a kitchen. They had an oilcloth, tablecloth on the table. And you know, you had to know them. I mean,
yeah.
and Leon Ray worked for the Stileses, so, you know, any of the Stiles friends, I don't ever remember going, I never went by myself.
Yeah.
You just went into a room and you just knocked on the door and they opened the door and said, oh, hello, and you know, come in. And then they set you down and they brought out this beer, this homebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember drinking moonshine. I do out of a bottle with Arch Sean McGinnis and some of the more boys.
This is during the 30s or?
This is during the 30s.
After Prohibition or?
Oh, no, yeah. It was before Prohibition.
I mean, before it was over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, I was
33.
I was in 34. From
yeah, it had to be 33.
I can remember having a bottle of whiskey, of White Lightning, and
was
in
this
a mason jar.
Drinking there. What about the something was said sometime about the Lincoln Boyhood Cabin or the wasn't
there.
That a place that,
that
of entertainment or something?
That was a place where you, well, that was still.
Well,
you
at home, it's not
yeah.
the cabin, but the house bit, yeah.
Well, not over at Hodgensville, it's the one over
it's
here.
It's the one on the other side of New Haven, yeah. That's between Actionville and Hodgensville.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's
the Knob Creek,
there.
They
Knob
call
Creek
Knob Creek.
Place,
uh-huh. But
and that was a place, and I can remember going over there one night, it was Arch, and I, and John.
Your brother John?
My brother John, and I don't know whether Julie was with him. Now, this is all before 34.
Mm-hmm.
Before the September of 34. Now, when it was, it might have been that summer, it might have been before that. I don't know about the dates. And I think he was with Julie. And we all went over there. And you had a bottle, we had drinks. I guess we, under the table, the boys took care of that. And I can remember, oh, it was a rough crowd over there. I was real happy about the whole situation. And this man came over to our table and he said, I've bought my flask with him. And I was indignant. I said, what are you talking about? Somebody at this table's got my flask. Well, I didn't, there was a dance floor, you know, we danced. And Arch was sitting there, he didn't say anything. And I was just, I just infuriated that he would accuse any of us of doing it. And we go out and get in the car eventually. And I'm still raising Cain about this man. And Arch turned to me and he said, well, of course you know John has it. And I said, no, I don't know John has it. And I turned around and I said, have you got that man's flask? And John said, yeah, I got that man's flask. Oh, it was all, I remember how intricately carved it was. It must have been wood with a glass thing down in it. He must, I don't worry. And I said, will you take that back? That's stealing. And John said, well, I'm not going to take that back. You're crazy.
And I remember how, and Arch was sitting there not saying a word, and all the time he knew he had it.
He knew that you were standing up for something that wasn't so.
Well, yeah, and I guess he thought that I really thought knew that John had it. I guess he figured that I knew it. And I don't think John took it back. I remember how it, oh, I just thought that stealing is the worst thing in the world. And what the circumstances were with the John got it, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think he just walked over and stole it.
Mm-hmm.
I think so, but anyhow, I don't think he could have done it. And I can remember seeing how intricately carved it was. And I said, well, that looks like a real nice thing. You know, I don't leave a man for long, but I don't think I revealed it on him. And I don't think Arch or this other girl, or this girl, and it must have been Julie, I can't imagine somebody else, that they said anything. You know, they didn't back me up. They didn't say, yeah, sure, take it back.
Back to Prohibition a little bit about, of course, they closed the distilleries, and the workers who worked at the distilleries had to find other jobs. Yeah. Do you know of any?
Well, a lot of the men that worked at the distillery stayed on at the farm. Mm-hmm. While the dad owned. There was Albert Scott, and
they worked the farm, and anything like farming and animals people, or whatever.
They still had stock. They mm-hmm. still had cattle. And he had some horses. I don't remember what he did with the horses. I'm real vague about a lot of that. Of course, those were the days when, you know, you're just kind of carefree. And I don't remember too much about what he had and who the people were. Now, some of them went to work for Minnie and Josh worked for Mr. Shawnee, and Mrs. Shawnee kept them on, and Jody kept them on after Mrs. Shawnee died.
Worked in the house or worked
on? Minnie worked in the house, and Josh just was handyman, I guess. I don't think they lived there. They must have lived. Jody must have taken back and forth too. They still must have lived out at early times out at Jack Bean Farm. That's where they come from. They were originally mm-hmm. Mr. Bean's servants. And Mr. Bryan was a good carpenter, and I guess he just got jobs. You know, they were still there. The Smiths left. The Smiths had rent a store, Jack Smith's family, and they rent a store, and they came to town, and then he started a store here in town, because after the distillery closed, of course, the post office was gone, all that community yeah. was broken up. There were Janeses. There were Tuckers. I don't know. I think some of them, I don't know what they did. They just must have had little pieces of ground that they
did the best they could.
The best they could on there. Mm-hmm. Henry Shane, I remember he was one of them, and he came to town. I think he was not well educated. He was not educated at all, but he was just a born mechanic and mm-hmm. just a genius, I think.
Yeah. You know, at one time, I asked you about a factory that a level factory that supposedly your father and other partners had started to, there was an inventor who had invented this particular type of level, and I got this from a newspaper article, but you didn't remember a lot about it. I didn't know if you had thought any more about it.
What's a level?
A level is a carpenter's tool. And there was some type of a new type of level, self-adjusting or self-leveling.
Oh,
thing.
Well, it wasn't here.
In Bardstown.
The Bardstown factory? Now, the only factory I remember Dad being associated with was the canning factory.
The canning.
And that was when we ripped up the barber place.
Okay.
So that was between 28 and 30.
30. Okay. Did they ever get that off the ground? The canning factory?
It worked. It operated one summer. I think probably they lost money on it.
Right.
I think people were stealing from them. I think that was Will and Dad, and if any, Will Stiles and Dad, mm-hmm. I don't know. Evidently, this level thing was Will Stiles and Dad, because I can remember again, and I guess we were still in the barber place. Dad came home from Louisville, and he was raising cane. He had seen these signs going to Louisville, and it said Guthrie and Stiles. And he came back, and he was furious. What has Will gotten me into again? So he called him up, and he said, what have you gotten me into, an advertising business? You didn't say a word to me about advertising business. And he ran it, I guess, for a few minutes, and finally Will said, you think you're the only Guthrie in the whole world? And he gone in partners with a Guthrie up in Lexington.
Okay.
But I can remember that, yeah. And it's so evidently a lot of things that Dad was in, he was in with Will.
With Will.
And mm-hmm. not always knowing all about it. I know they sponsored Jody down at the, that was another thing after Prohibition came in. Jody Clark was sent to Florida for a beer concession. Now, whether they were making beer, they must have bought a plant down there. And this was when beer, when right after Prohibition
was over. 34, 35, in that period.
Yeah, must have been that period. Mm-hmm. And they sent Jody down to take charge. Well, what in the world they were thinking about, I don't know. But they had run across it, I suppose, on their trips every year, see Mother and Dad and Will and Annie went to Florida. And they must have run across it. And Ben would know more about this.
We'll have to talk to Ben.
I know Jody didn't do anything. I mean, he went broke. He just flew back and forth and chartered planes and that's when Will and Nanny took his
house. Mm-hmm.
And practically all the furniture in it. And Dad hadn't as much invested as Will, of course, because he didn't have as much. We got an Oriental rug. Oh gosh, I've forgotten what we did again. An Oriental rug. I know it was in the dining room.
Whatever Jody was supposed to do as part of the partnership, he didn't.
He went broke. They just appropriated his things. His, mm-hmm. And that's when Jody and Kathy broke up. And he went to Chicago. He went someplace else. I don't know what he ever did after that. They said he was working chef in a restaurant or something. But anyhow, I can remember vividly when Jody owned the house, because I can remember going up there at intermission parties at Dances. So mm-hmm. I was going to Dances, mm-hmm. but it's all before 34.
Okay. What about the, talking about the Chicago thing, did you know of any connection in a big city, Chicago or Kansas City or St. Louis or Indianapolis, Cincinnati, anybody that came down here and to deal in whiskey or to buy whiskey or...
Well, I know that there were people, but Dad was always having... Now, you're talking after Prohibition or before?
Well, during Prohibition.
No, I don't know anything about that. Let me get some of these people. John...
Talking about the Chicago or our big city people coming in, and you said that you really didn't remember anybody actually coming
not
to buy whiskey.
During Prohibition.
No. But
no, Dad wasn't selling whiskey. He mm-hmm. was not at that time. I say we had it in the house, mm-hmm. but he didn't sell whiskey at any time that I know of. From the time, you know, mm-hmm. between the distillery time, I have no. Somebody sold it, but there were moonshine. They made whiskey. They found out later. Will said there was a still in at Wickland. Of course, you've heard that.
I've heard it, but I didn't know if it was really true.
Oh, you! I tell you who you could get to talk about these things. Laverne Corbin. Her father was in on that.
Oh, okay.
Kurtz was in on it because she was telling me all about it. I don't know if she wanted to record it or not, hold it or not, but. They make whiskey, and then when Dad, they found the still down the basement when they bought it, and Dad said, "Well, Will," because Dad didn't know apparently until they bought it, and Will said, "Well, I didn't know a thing about it." Tell me you didn't know a thing about it.
As astute as he was, he didn't know anything about the still in the basement. Okay, but what you're saying there is that happened. Before you turned it into a tea room, this was during Prohibition.
This is when Mother and Dad back.
When Prohibition was repealed and Dad got enough money together, I guess he sold the place in 35. That's the reason there's a 30, looks like 35 mm-hmm. mark in there, maybe 33. Mm-hmm. But they sold the place in 35, and by this time I'm in the convent, and they moved. They moved on August the 4th.
Well, this ledger goes to June 28th of 35. So,
well, maybe I thought Olive and them had left. I swan. Live there, but I and we see Bill Beam and Mary and what's the girl's name?
Not Elsie, is it?
No.
Annie?
No.
No. Sorry.
No, what is Little Bill and the old Mary's? It's not Bill's daughter. It's Mary Fairfirst's husband. Mm. Well, they live there. They lived there. They came out there and lived. The Newmans lived there.
Oh, after the that, Newmans. The others had.
Charlie Newman and Jane. I don't know where their names are, but they lived there. They were living there. It seems to me they were living there when I was still home. So maybe they were there. But I cannot believe that one of us running that kitchen that long because.
Well, it says hotel register. Maybe that. But maybe no, these people couldn't all live. They couldn't all have been living there. I mean, no. They couldn't all have been staying there because they've got the same dates in a bunch.
Well, I think some of those are town kids mm-hmm. that just, they were there for mm-hmm. a party. We used to have a lot of parties.
Well, I see some of that. Maryville Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Chaplin,
lots of,
I think.
Yeah, lots of people there.
So,
well,
I don't understand that, mm-hmm. register those. And I think maybe it was just sitting around, but. I just don't think one of us served meals that long, because mm-hmm. I can remember big parties that mm-hmm. we had in those front rooms. Newman would come home, and I'd come home, and we'd have every vacation. We have, I just don't remember. I can't believe I was that far off. And Olive and Evelyn had already gone back to town, to Louisville. See, they were living in Louisville when the flood came.
37.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
my mother and dad moved from Wicklin to Louisville in August of 36, and they stayed 1 year in Louisville, and he started his bottling house down there.
Mm.
And while they were getting together and building this distillery out here,
mm-hmm.
it was a whole year that they were there. They went on August the 5th, and they came a 4th, and they came back on August the
4th.
Because it was Lewis's birthday.
Okay.
And Lewis said, I remember, of all the times, to come back. And I guess it was 36, 37.
Well, then things picked up after Prohibition was over. Then the economy would pick up. You had people getting back in the whiskey business, and... of course, theoretically, if you thought about it, when they went back to the distilleries and the warehouses, there should have been full whiskey, and they could have just started shipping that whiskey that was there. But in reality, was there any whiskey in the warehouses? Or?
Well, they started making whiskey, of course, and it was the pride of them. He had two or three different labels. Now, whether the his label was Pride of Nelson. Now, whether he had some other labels. Now, Jimmy particularly, maybe Ben could tell you something, Jimmy could tell you more about the distillery operations than I can.
Okay.
And the beginning, Cliff Busick built the warehouses, I know,
okay.
because that story has been told. But Cliff was at that time, he had moved to Bardstown, I guess. I don't know whether the family had moved or not. And at that, he and Dad had become friends, and he was selling heavy machinery for some heavy machinery company in Louisville. Who's John Pruitt worked for? I think maybe that's the company. But anyway, Dad said to him one day, Cliff, why don't you build me some warehouses? And Cliff said, I don't want to think about building warehouses. And Dad said, anybody can build warehouses. I could build a warehouse if I had time. And Cliff thought there was a lumber for sale, a lumber lot for sale, not Grigsby, but...
Did I tell you that man came, when we had the open house at home, that he came with his wife.
That had
lived at that house, but he had owned the lumber yard or
he
something.
He was the one that owned the lumber yard.
Either owned it or his father-in-law owned it or something. There was some connection there, and he sold it to Busick. That's what
well,
y'all coming
is
back
that
to.
Right?
He walked in out of the blue.
Yeah, because I was leaving.
Well,
when
you know,
they drove up in that camper or
yeah.
whatever.
It was a van and two or three
a van,
cars.
And he, Franklin was standing there,
yeah.
and he was asking about
yeah.
it. And he had lived at that house
uh-huh,
upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
With that house. Well, Cliff bought the lumber yard, and he proceeded to build
the warehouses.
Mm. And that's when he got into the lumber business.
Mm. You know, something we forgot to go over again, I know you've told the story before, and that's why you probably didn't, the vault, the robbery at
oh.
early times, we didn't go into that, and we really need to get this on this tape, on the The robbery took place in 26, I think,
in 1926. In April, I think the 25th, I'm not real sure, of 26. And that night, mother and dad had, this morning, and they had Sam and Captain Connor and Will and Nanny had been out the house. And I guess it was just sitting around visiting because there were too many unplayed cards. And they left about 12 o'clock. And boy, we didn't have any keys. And the front door was just like my front door is. Half of it was glazed. There were no keys to the house. We used to go away and just close the doors and put down the windows in case it rained. Nothing was ever locked up. I said, wouldn't that be wonderful if they'd like that
right now?
But of course, it wasn't so wonderful then because people were coming to the house we didn't know about. And then Will and Nanny had, they hadn't had a chance to get very far. And there was a knock at the door, and Dad just went to the door thinking that it was them coming back, that something had happened. And here were these men standing at the front door. And one of them flashed a badge, and he said, "I'm a revenue agent, and I want to search your house." And Dad slammed the door in his face. And as he did, the man pulled out a pistol. And there was, our house was shaped, you've seen pictures, I guess, of our house at early times, or you remember, it had an L-shaped porch on it. And right there was, on that side of the L, was Mother's room, and there was a window right there. Mother and the baby, and Louis was the baby, were in there. And here was this door, half of it was, and there was no point in not opening it. And the man said, "Open it." And he did. We were upstairs asleep. And he led Dad, or one of the men in the group, I think there were three of them at the front door, led Dad to the inside entrance of the basement and turned on the light, which was kind of in an out-of-way place. You had to put your hand back like that, like the switch was an afterthought.
Oh, it's evident he'd been there before.
Somebody had been there before. Well, as a matter of fact, there was a man by the name of Paul from Fairfield who had cased the joint. He said Mother had awakened on several occasions previously thinking that there was somebody in the house. We had a swinging door between the kitchen and the breakfast room. And she got up one night and walked all the way through and finally went out to the house in the back where our couple stayed and asked him if he had been in the house. Asked him if he had been in the house, and he said no. So he even came, that man was evidently in the house at times when we were there. But anyhow, we had a back entrance to the basement, you know, the
outdoor.
And they had a great big truck, and they drove it up, and they made Dad open the vault, and then he came on back upstairs, and they had a man, because they got Mother up, and Mother and Dad sat in the living room with Vernon. I don't know what his first name was. His first name was Vernon. He was a man from Chicago. He was college educated, I think. They had a really quiet conversation, and he guarded them and told Mother and Dad to take the jewelry off and put it away, that he didn't want it, but some of the others might. And so he guarded them, and Mother, I know Dad told later how scared he was because Mother was so furious that she was just being as nasty as could be to him. She tried to get up to go to the bathroom. She was going to climb out the bathroom window. I might have just was going to do that. And he followed her. And so that was, she couldn't do that. So anyway, when he got ready to leave, the lights were still on down at the gate. We had a rock wall around the yard and the gate and great big lights up on the gate. And they were still on. And so the truck drove off, or he heard it, and he said what he was going to be. So he asked her to turn off the lights, and she said, "You know so much about the house." She turned off her stuff. They knew how many children there were, and you were always slept. Oh, she was so nice. And Dad said he thought his dad was going to hit her, but he didn't, and he didn't turn off the lights. And he went on out, and they caught him. Then after they all left, Dad got human up. And Newman went across to Henry Shane, I mentioned him before,
We had three cars, I think, and they had done something to all the cars, but they couldn't start. And Newman went over and got Henry Shane, and got Dad, and we came in town and got the Heavy Tongue and Mr. Burba, and I guess Chuck Hatter and all
anybody.
The deputies. And Dad always said if it hadn't been for them, that they'd never found them, they'd never caught them, they'd never gotten the whiskey back. The police and Louisville was in cahoots with them.
Oh, okay.
They would find out that the whiskey was someplace, and they'd get there and it had been moved.
Moved.
And it was finally found on a Ballard farm in Jefferson, Alabama, someplace. They had dug, you know, buried it. And they got a lot of it back. They didn't get it because they'd been paying the police off and different people.
But you're saying lots and lots of cases. I know the first time I heard it, I was thinking maybe 10 or 12 bottles or something. But you're saying there were cases.
There were, I think they got back 150 cases.
Oh, they got